Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to From Complex to Queens, Mason Avenue's minor league podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and this week I'm joined by Ken Lavin. How's it going, Ken?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm good. Lucas will not be with us this week, and that makes me a little sad because this is actually a really cool promote extend trade, I thought, anyway. So I was looking things up, and apparently this week in 1937, J.R.R. Tolkien first published The Hobbit. Now, I don't know about you, but The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings have been, like, really influential in my life. When I was a kid, I remember my uncle teaching me how to do, like, basic DOS commands on the computer at the time to play a Lord of the Rings game. You probably don't even, like, never had to utilize DOS, did you?
No. Going to be honest with you, I don't fully know what that is.
Basically before Windows became like a thing, you would have to like, I don't know, it was like the command directory for computer, I guess. You'd have to like type in like /c/run/, you know, windows.exe to like load up Windows, like some stuff like that. So like I remember learning basic DOS to be able to play this game, and then when I got older and I actually read like The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, it was such a great, you know, story and everything that got me into Dungeons and Dragons, and I don't want to sound too nerdy, but I was really into that too. So
it was kind of like your gateway into like fantasy as a genre.
Yes, definitely.
Gotcha.
So for this week's promote extend trade, three different scenarios with three different players. So, well, how familiar are you with The Hobbit anyway?
I read The Hobbit when I was maybe 12. I don't remember large swaths of it. I saw the first movie and didn't really like it and didn't see any of the subsequent sequels. So, semi-familiar. I wouldn't say I'm intimately familiar, but
yeah,
like,
you don't
I know the gist of it.
Yep, that's all we need for this then.
Gotcha.
So of these, the following players, we have three scenarios. Who is going to be doing what? Mm-hmm. So promote, I guess, is going to be the player that goes with you to Lake Town and the Lonely Mountains and fights with you with smog and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Extend is going to be the guy that fights with you and then, you know, makes it back. So, the player that sticks with you through thick and thin, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then trade is going to be the player that succumbs to the temptations of the ring. So, we're going to have Turk Wendell, Tsuyoshi Shinjo, and R.A. Dickey.
Okay. Can you tell me the choices again?
Sure. So, promote is going to be the player that goes to Lake Town, the Lonely Mountain, and fights smog. The whole thing. Yeah. Extend is the guy that does all of that, and then he comes back, you know, good comrade.
Mm-hmm.
And then trade is going to be the guy that just gives him to the ring and becomes Gollum.
Okay, so it's Turk Wendell, Dickey, and who was the third?
Tsuyoshi Shinjo.
Oh. All right, so I don't have a strong emotional attachment to Turk Wendell, so he's going to succumb to the ring.
I agree with that one.
Shinjo, I'm kind of endlessly fascinated with, But R.A. Dickey is R.A. Dickey.
He is.
So, yeah, we're going to go defeat Smog, R.A. Dickey, the promote or extend R.A. Dickey, and then promote the guy who sees you through to the end, Shinjo.
See, what my rationale, I did pretty much the same thing. Dickey was, you know, he comes into the fight and then he makes it and we all go back to the Shire. Everything's good. And obviously he named one of his bats after, you know, Lord of the Rings weapons. So the best scenario is obviously going to be him.
Yep.
And then I was kind of torn between who would succumb to the ring, because Turk Wendell's pretty crazy, but Shinjo is also kind of crazy.
Yes.
But I felt that Shinjo, are you familiar with Tom Bombadil from Lord of the Rings?
Barely.
Okay. Basically, he's like, I don't know, like an author's like caveat, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he's so powerful and aloof of the mortal going-ons and whatever else that he can kind of just take the ring and doesn't care about it. Like, he's above that.
Right.
I feel that Shinjo is just so out there that he would just be above everything. So yeah, he wouldn't succumb to the ring.
I can agree with that.
And Turk Wendell is kind of crazy that he would succumb to it. So he's like that kind of crazy.
So it works both ways. Both.
Yeah.
In terms of the traditional game and then in terms of the Lord of the Rings. There we go.
So that was a unique promote extend trade for this week. All right, well, the main storylines, I guess, of minor league baseball right now is that the Arizona Fall League started. For anybody who's not familiar with the Arizona Fall League, it's basically an off-season winter league that's designed to kind of give players a little bit of extra playing time, and teams will send, you know, highly regarded prospects or players returning from injury, or players that just need a little extra time to, like, learn new grip or new mechanics or whatever. So because of this, games are filled with, like, scouts and baseball executives and everything. It's kind of unimportant, but then important at the same time. So there's 6 teams in the Arizona Fall League, and each team is affiliated with 5 MLB teams. So the Mets are affiliated with the Scottsdale Scorpions. And then the Scorpions are also affiliated with the Atlanta Braves, the Toronto Blue Jays, the Philadelphia Phillies, and the San Francisco Giants. So as a result, Scottsdale has a pretty stacked roster. I don't want to say mostly from the other teams, but yeah, kind of.
The Mets have done their part in recent years.
Yes. Tim Tebow notwithstanding a couple of years ago.
Yes, of course that's who I'm referencing.
But just kind of quickly looking over the MLB top 30 prospects for each team. The Braves are sending top 30 prospects Deyesbel Hernandez, Grayson Janista, Trey Harris, Justin Dean. And they're also sending a hitting coach from their organization, Danny Santabastian. The Blue Jays are sending Kevin Smith. And they're also sending manager Cesar Martin. The Phillies are sending Alec Bohm, Mickey Moniak, Jojo Romero, Connor Siebold, Spencer Howard, and pitching coach Brad Bergeson. And anyone that knows me knows that I have a strange irrational love for Brad Bergeson, because like 10 years ago, I went to Camden Yards, a Mets-Orioles game down there. And it was like free t-shirt night. And for whatever reason, they're giving out Brad Bergeson t-shirts. So he's my favorite Orioles player of all time. And then the Giants are sending Helio Ramos, Joey Bart, and Tristan Beck. So the Mets, they're not... the Mets contingent does not exactly stack up too favorably with some of those other teams.
Yeah.
The Mets are sending this year Luis Carpio, Riley Gilliam, Andres Jimenez, Jordan Humphreys, Patrick Mazeika, David Peterson, Ali Sanchez, and Blake Taylor. Thomas Zupacki was also supposed to go, but the Mets shut him down at the end of the year. Some arm soreness and just kind of general fatigue, so they replaced him. They're also sending Syracuse hitting coach Joel Chmelis. So, obviously, you know, the AFL is a place to kind of showcase your players and your talents and everything like that. But you're also mixing with other playing, other coaches, other players. And, you know, there isn't exactly an adversarial relationship nowadays among, you know, players from other teams. So guys will, you know, show each other grips. They'll help each other out, whatever like that. So a lot of times players come back with, you know, new tricks that they've learned or new advice or whatever, whatever like that stuff.
Yeah. Wasn't it originally like conceived of as like a graduate school for prospects?
Yeah. I was originally going to call it finishing school, but then I looked up what finishing school actually is. And I was like, okay, that literally is not what I was thinking. But yeah.
Where like you would send guys when they graduate from like the low minors to the high minors.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're putting your finishing touches on these guys. You're seeing, you know, usually it's kind of like the elite of the elite. So you're seeing how they, you know, perform against other.
Give them a little taste of high minors baseball before they like actually tackle it.
Exactly. So we're going to run down the list of Mets players that are going to the AFL. And we'll just individually, you know, talk about what we would like to see from each guy. So would you like to start or should I?
Go for it, Steve.
Okay, so first guy we'll talk about is Luis Carpio. And last year he hit for, you know, an abysmal average with St. Lucie, but he did hit 12 home runs. Basically, he changed his swing a little bit, added some more loft. Now, this season, he hit for a decent average. He hit .263 and got on base at a .347 clip, but he didn't show too much power. And in the kind of limited viewings I saw of him in Binghamton, the swing is kind of toned down a little bit. So I'd like to see Carpio kind of find like a happy medium and sync his ability to hit for power and his ability to hit for average. Maybe he can learn, you know, some strategies from some of the guys, you know, like look at a guy like Joey Bart, who has a ton of power and he can hit for average, you know, he could do it all. So maybe Carpio can get some tips.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Maybe also continue to play solid defense as he puts like the shoulder injuries that he's had the last few years further behind him.
Yep.
Those are the two big things.
He's mainly played like second base, but they did get him into a little shortstop, a little third base. So if he can play all three positions, obviously that's a lot. The versatility makes him a lot more desirable as a call-up.
Yeah.
All right, so the next guy is Riley Gilliam. And when I first got to see Gilliam in Binghamton, I was kind of excited, but then I was kind of let down, and we'll talk more about that later. But what I'd like to see from Gilliam is maybe developing a fastball grip that adds some more spin rate to his fastball. It doesn't have much plane because he's not that tall, and it doesn't have too much run. It's pretty straight, and the velocity is nowhere near as high as, you know, the initial reports claimed. But we'll get into more of that later. But you know, you can't stretch him out and make him grow a couple more inches to give him his fastball some angle. But you can teach a guy, you know, grips that increase spin rate. I was looking through some driveline data, and different grips do have, you know, an effect on spin rate. And
yeah,
spin
rate isn't the basic idea that the wider your fingers are, the lower the spin rate?
Yep, that is correct. Sorry. So, I mean, if you can play around with how wide your fingers are, where exactly you're placing your fingers on the seams and the horseshoe and everything like that, you can get more, you know, you can manipulate the spin. And then, you know, in some cases, velocity increases a little bit too if there's more or less spin. So if he can develop a new grip on his fastball that would give a little bit more run, I think that would do wonders for him.
Yeah. I'd like to see him, you know, throw more strikes. Yeah, throw more strikes and keep the ball in the yard.
Yes, very important.
Especially, it's a difficult run environment being, you know, in a desert. I'd like to see him kind of like excel, or if he's going to continue to take a step forward, which, you know, I'm barring altering his fastball or developing something completely new, who knows? But yeah, generally throw strikes and keep the ball in the park.
All right, next up is probably the guy that we're all most invested in, and that's Andrés Giménez.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a bad season, I guess, by any measure of the stick, thanks to just the new swing. He hit 245, 319, 378 in the first half, and then 254, 300, 393 in the second half. So it's not like he got tired or anything like that. But one thing that did bottom out in the second half that wasn't as bad as the first half was his court stealing rate. He did run a bit more. He had the mandate to just kind of go and learn, you know, pitcher movements and reflexes and whatever else. But he went from a 76% success rate in the first half to a 56% success rate. So I don't think he's ever going to be like an elite base stealer, but he does have above average, you know, maybe even plus speed. Mm-hmm. So if he can get more comfortable on the base paths, get that success rate up to a better, you know, a more...
to like a winning bet, you know?
Right, to a more palatable level, because 56 is like really bad.
Yeah.
I think generally like 72 or something like that is accepted as like...
Yeah, I forget okay, exactly what the break-even point is.
Yeah. But if he can learn some ways to be more comfortable on base paths, you know, maybe the enhanced ability to steal bases kind of counters the weirdness that his swing has right now. And, you know, those singles in effect become doubles because he's stealing bases. And at least right. He's putting himself in, you know, scoring position more often.
Yep. So yeah, I'd probably like to, I mean, the obvious thing is, make more contact and spray the ball around the field more, you know, kind of undo some of the things that they tried to change. But realistically, yeah, I think that's a pretty fair ask.
I mean, I would have gone with just basically to rehaul his thing again and start from the beginning, but I don't think that they're going to do that with just one season's worth of data.
Yep. So yeah, steal bases, choose your spots better on the bases and, I guess continue to play stellar defense.
All right. Next up is, Jordan Humphreys, and he had Tommy John in mid 2017. And then he missed most of the season this year because of complications in his recovery. And he ended up just making, two appearances. He threw two innings and he allowed two hits. And he struck out two, and then he allowed one run and one walk. So really with him, I think just being on the mound is like what I want to see. And I don't even care if they're like good innings or bad innings or anything, as long as he just pitches.
Yep.
And yeah.
Like we've said about Anthony K, preseason and Sapucki this year, it's kind of just a victory for him to be on a mound.
Yep, absolutely. And his stuff was kind of just like okay before he went down. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if I know a lot of guys, sometimes they'll actually get a little bit of a velocity boost because they have a new UCL. So it's, you know, a little stronger. You know, his secondary stuff is kind of, to me anyway, like meh. So we'll see if being unable to pitch for so long, if he's, you know, thought some new grips out or, you know, might reassess his entire arsenal and whatever else. But just being able to pitch is a victory right now. So there will be more to learn about him next season when presumably he's able to
pitch full season. If he does pitch, at least a reasonably sized sample of innings in the AFL this year, I think we'll probably have a pretty good idea of how his recovery has gone, given the amount of media coverage. So,
and one good thing about AFL, I guess, I mean, I didn't really think of it, but is that a lot of the, I'm not sure if all or just certain stadiums, but they have full pitch effects, TrackMan, everything.
Yeah, so. It's the Cactus League. It's the all of the Western complexes.
So we'll be able to see, it'll be very limited samples.
An example from last year was Pete Alonso's homer in the Fall Stars game.
Right, against Nate Pearson.
That was 103 miles an hour.
Right. So having access to that kind of information, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but having access to that information, never hurts.
Yep.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we will talk about the rest of the Mets contingent in the AFL.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Hello, listener. I'm Sean Ramos-Firm, host of Today Explained, Vox's daily news podcast. Every day, Monday through Friday, my team and I look at what's happening in the world. We pick one essential news story that defines our moment and ask smart people to help us understand it in about 20 minutes or less. It's the perfect way to start or end your day. Subscribe to Today Explained for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app. It's from Stitcher and the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Welcome back to From Complex to Queens. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined by Ken Lavin. And we're just kind of going over the Mets AFL players. We went over a bunch, and we're up to the second half of the list now. And the next guy is Patrick Mazeika. So for me, Mazeika's never been a particularly good defender. This year, he basically split his playing time between first and catcher. And part of that was because Ali Sanchez was on the team, and Ali Sanchez is by far the better defender. But it's not like they were, hurting to lose his defense behind home. So I'd like to see Mazeika maybe pick up some tips from Joey Bart, who is another catcher. He's another big guy. They're both 6'3", 200+. But Bart moves decently behind the plate. Mazeika doesn't really move that well. So I'm hoping that maybe, he can learn a thing or two and become a better defender, because his bat is not going to play at first.
Right.
It could at catcher, though. And obviously catchers are a lot more valuable. So that would be if he can pick up some tricks about not letting the ball get by himself.
Yeah. I guess mine is just going to be, I'd like to see him play, considering I'd imagine Bart is going to
That's
lion's
a good point.
Share of the playing time, given that he's a top 20 prospect in baseball. Maybe just earn playing time.
Just listen to when he tells you things, and that's basically good enough.
Learn as much as you can.
All right, next up is David Peterson. And David Peterson didn't really have a great season, but he really wasn't that terrible either. The numbers on the surface are okay. And then the underlying advanced numbers are a little better. And the stuff looked, fine, mostly comparable to how it looked in 2018. So for me, I would like to see his ground ball rate improve a little bit. It dropped about 10% this year, and his fly ball rate went up about 5%. And he's not a true ground ball pitcher, because he does have decent strikeout stuff and he gets whiffs on his pitches, whereas, kind of traditional ground ball pitchers, they just have a lot of heavy pitches and they don't really strike out many guys. But obviously, the more stuff that's weakly hit on the ground means less stuff that's in the air, and less stuff is in the air, less of a chance it goes for extra bases or out of the park. So I'd like to see him get back to a better ground ball rate. It was about 60% last season. This year is about 50. So let's see if he can get it back up to 60, you know, going forward.
Yep, I'm going to say that that's probably crucial to his success in the league anyway.
Yeah.
It's in the Arizona Fall League, given what a crazy run environment it is.
Yep, just like the, you know, the same problems that existed when the Mets were in Las Vegas. It was dry air, you know, higher elevations, all that kind of stuff. Same stuff applies in the AFL.
I'd also like to see him work on his changeup a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Given that I think he's going to always struggle with a big platoon split. So he's going to need to get there with a third pitch. So like to see him work on that and maybe pick up some tips from some of the other people on the team.
All right. Next up is Ali Sanchez. And basically in Colombia and St. Lucie last year, and then earlier this year in Binghamton, he was kind of more or less a league average-ish hitter. I think he had, it was a 93 WRC plus in low and high A, and then a 99 in double A. So that's about, you know, average.
Yeah.
But then when he was promoted to Syracuse, much smaller sample size, but that basically plummeted. He's basically a guy that has no real power. I mean, it just is what it is. There's not much raw power in his bat. He basically ISOs between like 50 and 100 for his career. So for me, I'd like to see maybe some more doubles from him to get the ISO closer to like 100 than it is to 50. Josh Tolley basically survived as the Mets starter with good defense and a solid average in OBP and in an ISO in about that same range. And Sanchez has good defensive skills. So if he could just hit for a little bit more power, some more doubles, he might be able to kind of carve out a niche like Tolley did. And, you know, there's value in catcher defense.
Yeah, I mean, he really doesn't have to hit much to be a, you know, a backup catcher for a couple years. So, yeah, I'd like to see him hit for a little bit more power, especially just, you know, extra base, and also I'd like to see him continue to post higher walk rates like he did this year. You know, yeah, maybe even get into the you know 8-10 range instead of, you know, 6-7%.
He had a pretty solid average and pretty solid OBP without like a crazy high BABIP. So the hit tool is coming along, and you know the eyes is solid enough. I've always liked Sanchez, but I thought that his bat would develop a little bit more. Like, when you're slugging in the 300s, it's just not a good thing.
Yep.
All right, and last up is Blake Taylor. Now, Blake Taylor kind of came out of nowhere to have a really good season. Ever since the Mets acquired him, he was the throw-in in the Ike Davis trade. So we knew that he was going to be a project, but he's been around long enough now, and the numbers just never really stood out that much that I think we all kind of wrote him off as just like an organizational filler dude. But, you know, he's not that old. He just turned 24. And then last year between St. Lucie, Binghamton, and Syracuse, he posted a 2.16 ERA in 40 relief appearances with a 3.2 walks per nine rate and a 10 strikeout per nine rate. It's hard to find recent data on him because basically, you know, you start searching for information about him and everything goes back to the scouting reports from 2014 when he was first acquired by the Mets and he was 19 and being used in a different role.
Yeah, so basically, a different pitcher.
Yeah, like I'm not exactly sure what changed between, you know, last year and this year. Mainly, I think it's just that the stuff is just played up in the pen because last year he was still being used as a starter and this year he's been a reliever exclusively. But whatever it is that's been working, I want it to keep working.
Yeah, build on the success of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Basically. And you know.
It's interesting is he's actually going to be a free agent this winter. So, A, it's interesting to that the Mets sent him to the AFL. Like,
Everyone is going to get a look at him.
Right. Are the Mets interested in retaining him? Are they just doing him a favor and, like, letting him showcase himself? No, because, you know, I don't know.
True, yeah. That could be a possibility. But, I guess it's a really good opportunity for him.
Yeah. Hopefully he runs with it. And A, hopefully he runs with it. And B, hopefully he resigns with the Mets. And then C, hopefully he continues running with it next season.
Yep.
All right. Well, those are the Mets AFL dudes. And so, like I was starting to say before, you know, what makes the AFL important is that, you know, national scouts and executives get to see a lot of guys that they don't normally see. I don't know if it's exactly taboo or not, but, like, guys that are national scouts and writers and whatever else, you know, they usually don't get to see, like, the minutia of most systems, you know.
It's not like these guys are on a national level.
Yeah, they're not globetrotting over here. They're just kind of
obviously
depending on who we're talking about and where they are, you know. I'm just making up some guy that, like, you know, is in the DC area. He'll probably be more familiar with the Washington Nationals system because, you know, of location. Let's just use like Jeff and Jarrett, you know, they're more familiar with the Mets system and the ins and outs of it because they're locally based here, as opposed to, let's say, like, you know, the Toronto Blue Jays system or whatever. But, you know, this is the AFL is an event where, you know, these guys and executives and everybody can go and see all these, you know, players that they might not get to see all the time, that they're usually just kind of getting reports from, you know, trusted sources or whatever. And seeing players play is, like, a really important part of player evaluation. I'm just going to make up numbers here, but I'll say it's like 80% to 20% the importance of actually seeing a player versus just kind of, like, looking at the stats. Do you agree?
Yeah, probably in that ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, there is, you know, some stuff that only stats can tell, that, you know, we can't actually see with the naked eye, like spin rate or exit velocity or whatever. But majority of the stuff that you're looking for are things that the numbers, you know, can't really reflect too well or don't pick up on or whatever that you can.
Yeah, and, like, helps you cut through a lot of the noise.
Right.
Stats, you know?
Exactly.
Like, you're talking about, like, competition is constantly in flux. The level of competition they're facing is constantly moving. There's just so much noise in minor league numbers that it helps add context, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, technology is always evolving and getting better. So maybe one day there will be, you know, stats for that'll quantify things that, you know, can't be quantified right now. But until then, in terms of, like, player evaluation, the traditional scout kind of role will always be more important than the analytics. I know that for a time when I first started getting into, like, you know, advanced stats and then kind of branching out. First, I branched out into baseball in Japan. And then I started kind of following more of the minor leagues. And I was one of the kinds of people that were just like, oh, this is stat for that. This is stat for that. This is stat for that. Anything can be quantified by stats. But it just really is not the case, which, you know, I learned as I got more knowledgeable about, you know, minors and everything. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about some players that the numbers and the, you know, our personal evaluations, whether in person or video, or whatever, they just don't exactly match. And it happens a lot more often than you think. So we will be right back after this.
This is Kara Swisher. I want to tell you about my podcast, Recode Decode. Every week, we have candid, in-depth conversations with people like Elon Musk, Nancy Pelosi, and Kathy Griffin, We talk about how they got to where they are today and how their work is changing our world. New episodes of Recode Decode are released every Monday and Wednesday, and we often have bonus episodes on Friday. Subscribe for free to be the first to hear them on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to From Complex to Queens. I'm Steve Saipa. I'm joined by Ken Lavin, and we are going to talk about some inconsistencies in terms of what the eye says and what the numbers say. So, as I was saying before, you know, sometimes a player could have amazing numbers, and then when you see them, you're just like, huh, this is just a lot of statistical noise, be it a guy that's advanced to the level and is just kind of dominating, or, you know, sometimes there'll be cases where a guy is putting up very poor numbers, but they're getting rave reviews, and you just kind of say, well, what's going on here? And it could be a case of, you know, a guy, the converse, a guy that's just really young for the level, and he's just kind of surviving. But that in itself is an impressive thing. So we're just going to kind of give some personal anecdotes about players that, you know, this has happened to with us. I'll go first, and I want to talk about a player that I saw and I was impressed by, that the numbers don't necessarily, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know if you just kind of looked at the numbers. And that would be, one example would be Junior Santos. So for the season, he posted a 5.09 ERA in 40.2 innings. He had 25 walks and 36 strikeouts. So if you didn't already know the name, or if you didn't notice that, you know, he's extremely young, it'd be pretty easy to just kind of write those kinds of numbers off. He gave up a lot of runs. He walked a ton of guys. He didn't really strike out, you know, nothing crazy. It's a solid amount of strikeouts, but nothing too special. But then when you see him, it's like a completely different story. He's a tall kid. He's very well built. He's a tall kid that doesn't have any mechanical problems, which happens a lot from taller pitchers. He throws 90 to 97, and he sits 94 and 95. He has two secondary pitches, a slider, kind of borderline curve, and then a changeup that they're not the best right now, but he is set, you know, and they're projectable pitchers. So if you were just looking quickly, scrolling through Baseball Reference or Fangraphs or whatever, and you saw the name, or you just saw the numbers and didn't have a name associated with it, you just kind of be like, But then when you actually see the player, you know, it's, you are willing to, you throw out the numbers because you know that there's just so much there that just has not been captured by the numbers yet. Who's that happened with you, Ken?
Well, I saw Brett Batty this year, and, you know, it wasn't the best look. I only saw maybe four at-bats, but... and, like, he's struggled this year. But I could kind of see the potential there, or I could kind of see a lot of, like, where the power is going to come from. Yeah, I don't know. I had kind of a rough year, but
yeah,
I saw him glimpses of things that show potential that, you know.
Yeah, when I saw him in Kingsport and then a couple of games in Brooklyn, same thing. Like, the numbers are, you know, not that great, but because, you know, he has draft pedigree, because if you see him, you know, the swing, you could see, like, wow, if he connects, like, that ball's going to go far. If you know that, like, okay, they're just kind of, you know, he's fresh out of high school. He's probably tired. He's never played this much in his life. You know, he's against, you know, certain pitchers and whatever. He is younger, even though he's an older player, older draftee. He's still younger than quite a few guys that he's facing.
So yeah, he's basically like an elite prep hitter who was just held back, you know?
Right. So there's...
He repeated a level he didn't have to repeat, you know?
Without knowing any of this kind of stuff, without seeing him, without having the context, you could just look at the numbers and just say, like, oh, not very impressive. But, I mean, he was basically doing everything that you would... I mean, optimally, you want your guy to you know, hit 114, you know, with the batting line, but He was basically doing everything that you would want to see him do. You know, he was grinding through it and you know, learning and adapting, whatever.
And, like, it's nice to see how a dude kind of carries himself, you know, firsthand. You know, does this guy look, you know, does he carry himself like an elite athlete, or what's his body language like? All these other things that, like, I was kind of impressed with Batty.
Right.
Yeah.
I think an even better example for that would be Matthew Allen. Same thing as Batty. He's a high school draftee. Was promoted to Brooklyn at the end of the year. Was getting into those playoff games, but you know, Allen, like we talked about last week, was like an integral part of that, you know, bullpen, I guess. I mean, he's kind of making, like, you know, 2-3 inning relief appearances, but he was an integral part of that playoff run. And like an 18-year-old kid, that's a lot to put on his shoulders. Yep. And he, you know, he was pretty good. You know, didn't show any kind of.
He seemed very, like, mature stress. Beyond, yeah, you know, yeah, his experience level. Like, one of the things that really stood out to me was all the little idiosyncrasy, like, all the little things he does to stay on time, you know, kind of fidgets a little bit to make sure he's hitting his points and his delivery. All these things that are like, wow, this dude is serious.
Yep, exactly. That's a perfect way of putting it. He's serious. He means business. All right, well, you know, on the other side of this discussion now, there are players out there that will put up good numbers, but then when you see what they're doing, you kind of get a little disappointed because they're not as good as the numbers are showing. And for me, one player that happened with was Corey Oswalt. When I saw him in Binghamton in 2017, and that was the year that he was like the system pitcher of the year, when he posted a 2.28 ERA in 134 innings. So on the surface, you know, what's not to like about those numbers? That's very, very shiny numbers. But the fastball was like clocking 89-92, and the secondary pitches, neither was that great. The curveball just kind of was like a light floater, and the changeup was just kind of there, not much going on. So, you know, it's hard to get excited when other people are looking at the numbers and saying, like, okay, this guy's gonna be the next ace, 2.28 ERA, that's awesome. And then you're looking at it and saying, yeah, but the fastball is just kind of like average. The secondaries are like fringe average at best.
Yeah, this is
not too exciting.
I think this is very common for pitchers.
Yes.
Yeah. Where, like, a guy will have a really good season because he's a good pitcher for the league he's in, but the stuff is just kind of meh. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to project how he's going to get hitters at the next few levels out. So,
yeah. Another example of that was Riley Gilliam, I was talking about before.
Yeah, yeah.
The numbers, like, okay, you know, it's not like he was posting amazing numbers, so there was reason to have a little bit of concern about the stuff or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the stuff was just much, it was not as advertised.
Yeah, it was basically, know, like an advanced breaking ball in a league.
Yeah, and not much else.
A better breaking ball than the league is used to, and just being able to lean on it heavily.
Yeah, I mean, he was, when I wrote the draft report, you know, at Clemson, he was supposedly 96, 97, but in reality, in Binghamton, in Trenton, excuse me, he was like 91 to 94. And that was in May, so it's not like he was like tired or you know, anything like that. He was still pretty fresh. So, a little concerning, you know, that it's only, you know, not that there's anything wrong with 91 to 94. It's still pretty, you know, you can get by with that. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, like I was saying before, he's short, so it doesn't have much plane. It didn't have too much run to it. So that was the alarming part. I remember at the game texting Jeff and saying, like, is it me or his fastball, like, on a line? And, yeah, it was it was eye-opening because I was very high on Gilliam coming into the year. I think I put him like 19 or 20 on my top 25 list. I mean, at this point, even though the system, I guess the system is a bit better than it was last year. So he's probably not going to be on my list this year. But knowing what I know now, I probably would have not included him on the list last year either.
But yeah, I've always kind of liked Gilliam in the same way that I liked like Eric Gaedel. I think he's got a pretty good curveball. It's just
it is a very good curveball.
And you know, he might figure out how to be a big league pitcher for a few years, but just like really leaning on it. You know, if he refines his command enough.
Which might not happen because he has a pretty wacky delivery.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not wacky.
It's basically word, like high effort to get 91 to 94, right?
Yeah, a lot is going on.
Yeah, so I wouldn't necessarily bet on it, but
yeah. But this ties in now to kind of I'm sorry. Is there anybody that you
I was going to say most of the pitchers I saw start Brooklyn this year.
Oh yeah.
Brooklyn like always has a good rotation of these guys. I feel like Garrison Bryant, you know, I think we saw him together and it was like 88 to 91 touch at 91, like twice, with like a decent breaker, Matt Cleveland, was another guy like that where it's like, okay, you're having a pretty good year, but I don't necessarily understand how.
I was actually starting to write a story about Bryant and how, you know, his statistically was one of the best pitching years that the Cyclones have had. So I was going through the archives of, you know, Brooklyn pitchers, and there's a lot of really good ERAs with guys that didn't exactly light the world up on fire. In last year, just Christian James had a 2.01 ERA. And Jason Valera had a 1.83 ERA. Probably not guys that are good. I mean, they both got lit up this year, so that just goes to show. Harold Gonzalez in 2016 had a 2.01. That was the year he almost won the Triple Crown. He's had success, so I mean,
he's going to pitch at the big leagues.
Yeah,
it'll happen someday.
2013, Miller Diaz had a 2.02 ERA. 2013, Robert Gesellman had a 2.06 ERA. In 2012, there was the monster rotation where Sessa had a 2.49, Rainey Lara had a 2.91, Louis Mateo had a 2.45, Hansel Robles had a 1.11 ERA.
You mean Hansel Robles, the starter?
Yes, not official closer not elite, of the Los Angeles Angels.
Not elite reliever. Hansel Robles.
Let's see. Gabriel Ulloa had a 2.23 ERA.
Was that near Louis Mateo?
Yeah, that was 2012. All those guys were just the most dominant like rotation in the minor leagues possibly ever.
Did you mention Domingo Tapia? Was he there?
No, he was. Well, if he was, I'm not sure what year he was there, but he didn't have a insanely low ERA like these other guys. But yeah, Brooklyn, you know, skews things a bit because of the environment there.
Yeah, it's a good pitcher's park.
But yeah, that's a perfect example. You could look at a pitcher from Brooklyn and say, wow, this guy's going to be the next big thing. Not exactly. And another, this is a kind of hard one to tackle with, I guess. And, you know, for every person, it is, you know, they have to reconcile it differently. But how do you, you know, if I go and I see, you know, Riley Gilliam and he's having a you know, not that great game, and then next week you go and you see that he's popping bullets at 100 miles an hour, you know, and then some third person has a report that's a third, you know, piece of information that's different from the first two, you know, reconciling what you see personally with other reports from other people, you know, it can be a challenging thing because sometimes you'll second guess yourself. You know, did I really, you know, was he really that good or that bad as I thought he was? Was my equipment working? Was I just seeing things? Do I know what I'm talking about? You know, just everything will go through your head. And sometimes, you know, it just also is just kind of like human nature. Like, you don't want to be, you know, if you have like something that is drastically different from what's accepted, you know, you don't necessarily want to be the guy that's just like, oh, yeah, no, everyone else is wrong. I'm right. I know what I saw. Like, it can, you know, not that you don't want to like cause waves or anything like that.
Because I think a lot there's of times, a general understanding that a lot of this isn't an exact science, you know?
Yes, definitely.
Like, it's possible. Like Justin Dunn was always a good example. You'd get him on days where like he happens to be throwing the changeup well, and he'd strike out 10, and you know, look like a better pitcher than when the changeup isn't working, and you know, his fastball doesn't have that little bit extra. And you'd have like guys who think he's, you know, a big league starter or a mid rotation guy, you know, on a good day, and guys who think he's gonna struggle to be like a seventh inning guy in the bad day, you know?
Yep. Simeon Woods Richardson is another good example of that.
Yeah.
A lot of people would just say, okay, he's gonna be a wherever in the rotation starter, and then other people would say, yeah, well, you know, the secondary stuff outside of the curveball is just kind of not that great, and it's very high effort, probably reliever. So that's just, you know, that's one of those endless debates that will never stop until, I guess, we have a stat for everything.
Yep.
All right. Well, you have any last words for this week?
Not really.
I didn't really have a place in the discussion, but the AFL, they're using robot umpires that are calling like balls and strikes.
Yeah, that's so wild to me.
Down to the robot umpires. Not a fan.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You could follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa and Ken is at KenLavin91. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from, rate and review, and thank you everybody for listening. We'll be back next week, and until then, love the Mets, love the Mets.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.